Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. My name is Matt Stalnick, and tonight I am joined by two of my favorite fellow front stretchers, Mike Neff and Aaron Bearden. And we'll be discussing what was a wild and at times outright dangerous race at Daytona that was won by Dale Earnhardt Jr. We'll also dive into the news rules package that is set to debut for the Saturday's coming race in Kentucky. So strap in, because we're in for a great show tonight, guys. So guys, let's just start off with Daytona. What were the opening thoughts? Aaron, we'll start with you. What'd you think of the race?
Well, from what I remember, because I was up so dang late, it's kind of in a haze, but from what I remember from it, it was a decent race throughout. There were a lot of big wrecks, so the field really got thinned out. But that last wreck at the end is really just going to be what sticks with everybody from it. So, I don't know, the packs were a little too tight. I would have liked to have seen them more spread out. Dale Earnhardt Jr. won, so NASCAR almost got away with it and got their story there, but Austin Dillon's wreck at the end's kind of stolen the show, and I think that's the only thing that's going to be taken away from it. Fans are a little scared. Drivers were terrified. I mean, NASCAR, I hope, does something this time, because that was a little over the line for me.
Neff, what do you think?
I'm right in there with you, Aaron. There's no doubt about it. We've had this Band-Aid since 1987, and I agree. The race was good. I liked the fact that it seemed like there were some people that were able to make moves and do things and not be locked into wherever they were at. But I'm with you. The only thing anybody's going to remember is the fact that Austin Dillon came within several inches of having his car bounce into the stands instead of back onto the track. And I'm not the world's biggest Kyle Petty fan by any stretch, but there are things that he says that are true and come from a genuine passion of the sport. And one that he has been harping on forever is that we need to come up with something besides these plates. And as I say, in 1987, they were a Band-Aid. And NASCAR at that point in time said they were a Band-Aid. It's time to rip off the Band-Aid, because I think we've got an infection underneath it. And unless we do something, so we got really lucky. The bottom line is Austin Dillon hit that fence backwards with the bottom of his car, and that was lucky. If he goes in there top first, it could have shaved the top of that car off, or it could have come right through the windshield and killed him. I don't know what would have happened. They dodged him. It's time. I don't know what we got to do. I don't know how you fix it. I've said all along that I thought a six-cylinder engine would work better on plate tracks, but I don't know that it will necessarily. I mean, we've seen Formula One cars that can turn 200 some miles an hour with four cylinders. So I don't really know what fixes it, but we've got to do something before somebody dies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly in the same camp. I mean, you guys both know that I am an unabashed fan of pack racing, but I like, and I think you guys would both agree with this too, that I like to see good pack racing, and that means you want to see some handling, you want to see the car spread out a little bit. I think we could all agree there, right?
Absolutely.
So, and I think, mm-hmm, and I think definitely, we could also all agree that, you know, even stretching back into the 70s and not really the 60s, but I'll say the 70s and early 80s, pack racing and drafting has and always will be a part of the racing at Daytona and Talladega. There's no way around it. You could put a high downforce, high drag package on the cars at Daytona and take the plates off, watch them go 220. They're still going to be in some sort of a pack. That's not a bad thing. That's what we like. That's what the fans want. I mean, the key is how do we minimize the risks of it? And the biggest thing that, at least from my perspective, because I'm very much in agreement that there were aspects of that race that were just unacceptable. And the one thing that really stuck out to me in that race was that once the cars got about 10, 15 laps into a run with this particular rules package, they could spread out a little bit. You could make more moves. You weren't gridlocked. But after a restart, and especially on a late race restart where everyone's filling every hole that they can, the field just becomes completely gridlocked and everyone just becomes stuck to the side. So, you know, there's got to be something that we can do to unstick these cars from each other and loosen the packs up. And I think the one Band-Aid that I would say the first thing you got to do is give them single file restarts with under 10 to go. That would solve so many different problems, from at least from what I can say. And then, you know, I think the only way to really loosen up the packs is you got to find a way to increase the speed. And then that's going to be the only way to loosen the packs up. And I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear, but until you make it so that these guys have to not necessarily completely be lifting, but be either close to lifting or then definitely lifting at some point later into the run to get some pack separation and then maybe give them a little bit more spoiler so that they can pass. But you got to bring handling into it. If you don't bring handling into it and you don't bring handling into it into a big way, you're just going to have these massive wads of, you know, 40 cars driving around in a pack the whole time where no one can really pass. And it still takes a lot of skill. There's still, it's a different form of racing, but it's proven to be not safe and there's better alternatives.
I don't know that you need to increase speed though. I still say if you run 170 miles an hour, but you can't turn without lifting and or hitting the brakes, then you're fine. You don't have to be going 220 to force people to have to lift. If you've got a package where the car is not stuck to the ground enough that you're doing, you know, 170 miles an hour, but by the time you get to that turn, you are forced to lift. And again, I'm going to go off the deep end here, and I know this is totally hypothetical and not accurate, but put a 3-inch wide tire on it. They can't just barrel into the corner and know it's going to stick. If they have to lift, that's what fixes everything about Daytona and Talladega. You have to force them to lift off the problem.
Yes, I agree. I think the only way you're going to be able to fix any of this is if they have to lift. And honestly, I would rather see that done at a lower speed just for the sake of their safety and stuff. We all know NASCAR hates the dreaded 200-mile-per-hour mark, but just in some capacity, if they have to lift off and handling becomes important again, it'll at least spread them out a little bit. So when something like this happens, at least maybe they've got a second to react instead of a tenth of a second where they've just got no chance. I mean, if they don't do something for long, one of these guys is going to get up in that catch fence and it's not going to come back the way they've hoped and prayed for it too the last few years with Larson and Dillon. Somebody's eventually going to get hurt bad and then it's going to be too late.
Well, I think the racing can be safe at this particular speed that they're at right now, and I think that hovering around 200 miles per hour is, it's important to maintain that in some capacity for the integrity of the racing at these particular tracks. I'm obviously in agreement. I want to see some form of lifting happen at some point. I think ideally what I would like to see is, okay, you can go the best cars, we'll say the best, you know, third of the field can go without lifting for maybe 5 to 8 laps. And then after that, you're slowly starting to lift a little bit more. And then by the end of the fuel run, you know, you're really lifting quite a bit going to the corners. And that's kind of how it used to be to a little bit, but they didn't have the throttle response to really make it work. But I think if you did that, you know, you'd be down to maybe 7 to 8 car packs by the end of your end of your run. You still have some packs, you still have some drafting, you still got a lot of stuff that's going to be exciting. You're not going to completely get rid of pack racing, but it's safer and it's more in the driver's hands, and I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, we definitely just want everybody to be safe. Fans want pack racing. Some people will complain about it for a week now, but the second Talladega comes up again here in October, they'll be excited and ready to get to the track again. Yeah. So pack racing is just part of NASCAR. I know drivers sometimes don't like it. I'm sure Dale Earnhardt Jr. likes it because he's won the last two. But
I don't necessarily think they dislike all forms of pack racing, because pack racing is such an umbrella term that people associate it with whatever they kind of want to associate it with. And I think if you gave them a form of pack racing where they could get out of the throttle more, where there was more gaps between the cars, and they felt as though they weren't always in a situation where they felt like they couldn't pass and get out of a situation, I think they would all be fine with it. Because when pack racing goes right, and you can look at any race in the past where pack racing kind of has gone right, the drivers are okay with it. Like Denny Hamlin actually even said at one point after the race, he goes, I like this package. He goes, you just got to give us some sort of a way to make the catch fences safer, and then give us something where we can spread out a little bit more. We're not just stuck into these gridlocks late in the race. And I think that he was more really referring to single file restarts. So ultimately, I think we're close, and I think we're all kind of on the same page as what we want to see. And, you know, hopefully NASCAR will take some steps to get there.
Yeah, kind of to maybe put a bow on this so we get on to our next topic, but I agree with your idea of being able to run flat out, whether it's 3, 5, 7 laps, whatever it is, and then handling really being at a premium at the end.
Yeah.
And as we've or at least as I've preached forever, it comes down to the tires.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, gotta get tires that'll fall off. But the problem is, in order to get them to fall off at that much of a level, you're gonna risk some failure. Mm-hmm. And I think Goodyear is horrified at the thought of having a tire blowout at Daytona or Talladega. And I just don't think they're gonna build a tire that'll give up enough to get us to that level of racing that we want.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I would actually certainly have to agree with that. You know, we got to get tires in play here at these play tracks somehow, because as long as tires aren't a factor, it's going to be the exact same style of race throughout the whole race, and that's not really what we want to see. But to move on, the number one man coming out of Daytona, even after all of the commotion from Austin Dillon's wreck, was a man by the name of Dale Earnhardt Jr. Jr. has proven over the past, 14, 15 years, that he has simply got something on these restrictor plate tracks that no one else really seems to have. And I think the Coke Zero 400 this past Sunday was once again an example of it. So what does this race say about Jr.'s legacy at these tracks here? Is once again, he's proving that he's one of the best. Would you guys agree?
I would agree with that. I mean, look at the stats. Even when he was having his off years, when he came to Daytona or Talladega, he was still a threat. And I think he definitely has gotten some help this year, because that car they've ran at Talladega and at this Daytona race is an absolute rocket ship.
Yeah.
But I think it stands to a lot about, I guess, to say how great of a driver and how well he understands the air and the package at these tracks. That no matter whether it was the tandem drafting, whether it was the old school early 2000s draft style, or even now that they've kind of, I guess, reverted back to it a little bit, Earnhardt's always been up front and he's always been a contender. But at the same time, man, there were so many guys hoping to get a chase berth out of this. At one point, there were 9 drivers lined up behind him that were all looking for their first win. And when Junior's in a zone like that at these restrictor plates, it's just unfair to all of them, because he didn't even give them a chance.
No.
Yeah, I agree. I can't really call it a genetic thing as much as some people might like to, but whether it came from the focus that he had on it so early on, because we all know when Senior was alive that RCR and Earnhardt were both organizations that truly focused on the plate track. And I think part of his ability is just coming from that early focus in his career on the plate track so much. But I agree, he's kind of come full circle, because there was a good period there where he went several years without...
He was a doormat.
Without even really sniffing a win on a plate track. I mean, he had some top fives and some top tens, but even when he finished second a couple of times, you didn't feel like he was the car to beat. It was like he just ended up there. But this year, and even last year, it has felt like he's gotten it back to that point where he toys with it. You know, he'll run up front, and you'll see him actually drop it back and let some cars get in front of him, and then just play to get back up in front of him again. And I think we had missed that for a while, but I feel like in the last couple of years, it's gotten back to that. And I agree. I think at this point in time, he's reestablishing himself as the premier plate racer. And I know there's a few goals on his bucket list, and obviously a championship is a big one, but I have very little doubt that there is probably a part of him that really wants to exit this sport with the most plate wins by a Cup driver when he retires.
Yeah, I would actually certainly agree with that last point. I think Dale Earnhardt Jr. right now is the ultimate example that restrictor plate racing comes down to a lot more than just the car and then luck. Because, you know, I fight with people on that one all the time. And I've been trying to tell people for a while and that this Gen 6 style of pack racing is not, you know, a lottery. It's not this, you know, just step in the car, put your foot on the gas the whole way, and then just kind of see where your number comes up. And I don't really know sometimes where that comes from, you know. I think it's just because the plate tracks are so equal, and then the drivers themselves actually are so equal anyway, that when a guy who doesn't usually run up front actually wins one, people are shocked and think it's a lottery. But it comes down to the fact that guy was having a good day. But that's slightly off topic. But ultimately, yes, I think Jr. is the ultimate example of just how big of a factor actual super speedway skill comes into play. And he just, every time we come out here, he just, it seems like he just gets better and better at it recently. So, yeah, I think that he wants to exit the season with definitely a win at Talladega. That's got to be circled on his calendar. And the one other remaining thought that I have is you got to look at his attitude coming into these races. I think so many drivers come into the restrictor plate races and they're defeated. Ryan Newman would be my exhibit A as far as that goes. You know, you get these guys that they run in the back all race. They complain about restrictor plate racing every time they get a chance to, and they completely take their heads out of the game. They act like it doesn't require any specific skill. Then you get a guy like Junior who's just toying with the field, leading as many laps as he wants. He can do anything he decides to out there, and he just has an intuitively better understanding of the air and how to make his car handle in packs and how to control the field when he's out front, and he treats it the exact same way that someone would treat a road course. It's a special skill. It's a specialty track, and he is a specialty driver. He's the AJ Allmendinger equivalent, on road courses of restrictor plate racing. And I think if guys want to get better at it and want to get out of the middle of the pack and, they want to stop complaining about getting involved in these wrecks, take the way Junior approaches these races.
I agree. We all remember Talladega last year when he hung out at the back and started to make a move forward and couldn't get there and threw in the white flag. And I think, honestly, that was a moment in his career that was rather defining on plate tracks. Because at that, to see him after that race, that I was there for that, you could tell that it was literally eating away at his soul. That he just felt like he let that entire grandstand down.
Yeah.
And I think since that race, he has had the bit in his teeth at every plate track and has been determined to stay up front. And with his abilities and that determination, I think beating him takes a special day at this point in time on a plate track.
I would certainly have to agree. Aaron, any final thoughts on Junior?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking before we started on this, and I said watching him run at these right now reminds me of, playing the old Talladega track on, my NASCAR Thunder games on the PS2. He makes it look easy driving through the field. I mean, they tried. Jimmy Johnson got by him once or twice. He was about the only one that could. And Johnson could get him, and they'd trap him back 10th, 15th. Three or four laps later, there he was back at the front again. I mean, when he's got a bad car, he's a contender.
Yep.
When he's got a good car, it's almost an inevitability that you're going to have to be the one. He's going to have to get around him in order to win that race because he's in a whole nother level right now.
Yeah, and I think the most enduring aspect of it from my perspective is take a look at how Jeff Gordon and Casey Kane have performed in those Hendrick cars on plate tracks, and then take a look at how Junior and Jimmy Johnson have performed, and then look at the difference of attitudes as you go into these races. It's very clear that there's something going on between the driver and the car, and that it's driver related, and Junior and Jimmy have something. I think Jimmy too. Jimmy really is not a slouch lately on these tracks, and he's shown almost as much aptitude for it as Junior has recently. And then just looking at Casey Kane and Jeff Gordon, it's a stark difference. So it's very interesting to analyze that aspect of it. Now to shift gears a little bit, we have a completely different style of race coming up this weekend at Kentucky Speedway. And with it comes a brand new rules package, low downforce. Everyone wants it. The drivers have wanted it. The fans have been asking for it. So what are we thinking about this new rules package this weekend? Do you guys think it's going to work?
I think it's going to work at other tracks later in the year. I don't necessarily think Kentucky was the best track to test this. It's so bumpy and the way that the track's set up, I just don't think it's going to have a huge effect on Kentucky as opposed to other tracks down the line, like the ones they've announced, which we'll get to in a minute. But it's nice that they're trying something, and I'm glad because it's going to be the first one I go to, so I'm going to kind of get a firsthand look at it. But I don't necessarily think it's going to change the racing that much at this specific track.
Now, if you're the tech expert here, what's your stance on the slow down force package? I know this is something you've been clamoring for in the intermediates.
Oh, I've been screaming for it forever, and it's a baby step in the right direction. I kind of disagree. I think it's kind of a cool thing that they're doing it at Kentucky because of the fact that it is such a bumpy surface. And so you're already dealing with having to have a softer suspension because the cars have to deal with so much travel going over these bumps, and then you throw low downforce on top of it, I think you're really going to see these cars skating around, and I think it's really going to enhance the driver input and the driver ability, ultimately determining how this race plays out. So I hope I'm right. I hope it's going to be a really great race. I fear that it's going to be a Hendrick domination, just because almost any time we have one of these major rule changes mid-season, they seem to get their arms around it faster than anybody else. It used to be Roush, but I think that they're just so far out to lunch still at this point in time that they're not there yet. And I feel bad for them, because I would love to see them be a factor in this stuff as well. But I think you have a real chance of seeing it being a Hendrick Penske weekend, mixing a little bit of Gibbs with it probably too. But I really don't picture any of the small teams being there. But I feel like it's going to be a step in the right direction, and I like it being at Kentucky, because I think with that bumpy surface, it's really going to enhance the low downforce aspect of this package.
Well, I think that the racing has been so dreadful at Kentucky in recent years that it's why not throw the kitchen sink at it? And I'm not going to pretend that I know a ton about what goes into the engineering on some of these cars. I've really tried to bone up on that side of the sport and my understanding of it. And some days I feel like I'm halfway there, and some days I get lost and don't really understand how some of this stuff actually works, because it ends up being the complete opposite once we get to the racetrack. But I'm very excited to see how this low downforce package ends up working out. On paper, based on conversations that I've had with folks like Mike, and some other, people who know more than I do in the industry, they all seem pretty convinced that a low downforce package is going to remove the aero disturbance to a manageable degree, and hopefully let these guys race a bit closer, put the race in more in the driver's hands. I'm excited. Kentucky is a driver's track to begin with, and you're going to get a driver's race. So we'll see how it goes. My biggest concern is, if it's not drastically different off the bat, are the fans going to accept this? Are the fans going to be willing to let these teams, the sanctioning body and the drivers, work up this package out if it is not successful right off the bat? And I think that's going to be the biggest factor in whether or not this is going to work. This goes a lot longer and deeper than Kentucky, so it almost has to be a success off the bat for this to really get any steam. So we'll see how it goes, and I have high hopes. But we also learned today that there's going to be three more races on the schedule that will have different packages. And in addition to the Kentucky package that we're seeing this weekend, Darlington will also have that exact same low downforce package with a smaller spoiler, smaller splitter, smaller radiator pan. And then two other races, Michigan and Indianapolis, will both have a high downforce, high drag package that is going to be designed to increase drafting at those tracks. So What are our take on the three other rules changes here? Mike, we'll start with you.
I'm curious. I'm trying to understand it, just from the perspective of they're talking about being high drag and lower downforce, and I don't know how those two things go together. But I like the drag component of it. Any of you that have ever seen a Frank Kimmel street stock race with the giant wicker they put on top of the cars knows that encourages the ability to suck up from behind a car, and it doesn't encourage necessarily pack racing, but it gives the ability of a car that has some power, it has a better package, let's say, or a better state than a car in front of it, to actually go up and pass without assistance and without it being on a restart. And so I'm hoping the idea with the Michigan package, we're going to see some drafting out of that. The Indy package, again, I know I harp on it all the time that they need to get these cars off the ground, but at least their goal is to have the slingshot pass and the drafting get back into the game. I still feel like if you get these cars off the ground a little bit, you'd get to that faster, but I keep beating that dead horse until somebody proves me otherwise. But if nothing else, they're trying. I applaud them for trying. I feel like, and I know this is such a sweet science with these cars, and the adjustments that have to be so minute can make big differences, but I just feel like we're taking some really baby steps. And I know we're launching some trial balloons, but I'd like to see some, like, bigger car lot size balloons instead of, you know, county fair balloons.
Aaron, what do you think?
I'm just trying to wrap my head around all of it, honestly. I mean, I wasn't surprised to see it. I'm glad to see them trying something with Indianapolis, because I've been going to that race since I was about 3 years old. And let me tell you, it's been kind of rough to watch even in person the last few years. But I'm not really sure I'm buying it. They're saying with this package that cars line up coming off those turns are going to be 3, 4, and 5 miles an hour quicker than the leader and able to just slingshot around them. I think that's brilliant on paper. I don't necessarily think they're going to be able to bring that to reality. I don't know. I'm kind of curious about the Michigan one. I didn't really expect them to do anything at Michigan, because I honestly thought the product there was good, but I guess I do understand the concept of being able to compare it with there being two races, but we'll see on that. Darlington's fine with me. It's going to be similar to Kentucky, so I guess we'll kind of get a little bit of a preview of what that will look like this weekend. And I also heard they're trying a new tire at Richmond,
yep,
which is interesting, because that means the last two races before the chase are both going to have kind of a wild card element to it. So if any team can kind of get a heads up on that, maybe they'll be able to sneak their way into the chase. But at the same time, as Mike said, whenever they make big rule changes or anything like that, you can almost always expect a Hendrick or a Penske, or used to be Roush even, to be able to steal a victory and, I guess, take over with that. But I don't know. I like it. I like that NASCAR's doing something, because people have been complaining all season. I just wish that we could take the training wheels off on it and just go all out, because I don't think baby steps are quite good enough right now.
I'm going to absolutely disagree. I think these are actually pretty big steps for what NASCAR has done in the past. I mean, what I'm reading about this Michigan and Indy package is that's a big swing. That is a huge swing, and they're fundamentally trying to completely change the style of racing there. And I think that those are two tracks which can actually really support the style of racing that they're going for. It's something that privately I have really been cheering on and rooting for, is some sort of a high drag style package that brings some drafting into play at those two tracks, because I just think that with how big they are, that those are two tracks that shouldn't race like intermediates. Indianapolis and Michigan historically raced more like Daytona, not really Indianapolis, but really Michigan, raced actually more like Daytona and Talladega did in the 80s. Mike, I'm sure you can attest to that.
Amen.
That's what they should have always been going for. And if for anyone that's familiar with the old Ontario Motor Speedway, back in the day, I think it was Motor Speedway. I'm not completely sure on that. But Ontario was actually shaped exactly like Indianapolis when they raced on it back in the 70s. And that track was well known for having extremely exciting racing back then, because they had huge draft and huge slingshot passes. So for anyone that thinks that this is just NASCAR trying to, you know, oh, the high downforce that people love to complain about, this is a completely different style of racing that they're trying to bring back, that is actually historically closer to what those tracks kind of were meant to provide racing-wise. So I think that's a good move. Darlington, that's a great move, honestly. Darlington's the perfect track, I think, for a low downforce style package. It's an old-school drivers-type track, technical. That's what you kind of want. I think the softer, grippier tire is only going to help that. Richmond, until we kind of get a better sense of what that tire is going to be, there's really nothing much to say there. So, I don't know. I think it's going to make that run up to the chase very interesting, and I think it's clear that they're trying to test all this stuff out to put their best foot forward for 2016, because what better way to test how something races than to test it in a race? So that's my closing thought on that. What are your guys' closing thoughts on everything else for today? So we think it's going to be a pretty good race this weekend, boys?
I hope. Kentucky kind of quickly given itself a bad reputation for having fairly boring races. And I mean, at the start, people couldn't even get to the track back in 2011. They got stuck in traffic. But now when they get there, nobody wants to go just because the racing's been bad. So I'm glad they're doing something there. I hope it's a good race, because the track could use it. And I'm glad to see NASCAR doing stuff here in the Midwest, because fans need a reason to get out the tracks, because they put Kentucky another week closer to the Brickyard, and it's really hard for these people to afford these kind of things. So I hope there's fans in the stands, and I hope it's a decent race. I'm not completely sold yet.
Certainly. Nath, closing thought?
I will continue to hold out, as I always do, with my fingers crossed that it will pour down rain from about 4 o'clock on Saturday, so that they are forced to race during the daytime on Sunday, and once again we'll have a race like we did, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 years ago, they got rained out and raced on Sunday, and it was probably the best intermediate race of the entire year, because as I continue to harp, night racing looks great on TV, and it's more comfortable for the fans, and the racing itself is horrible. So if we can, I hope for a good race. I think it'll be a better race than it has been, just because of the low downforce, but if I have my druthers, it'll happen on Sunday afternoon, and it'll be the best race of the season.
Well, you've heard it from the experts, folks. That's all we've got for tonight. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be talking on a Monday. This has been a bit of an anomalous week. So tune in on Monday. We'll have all the action from Kentucky. Good night, folks.